Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live. We are live from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios. We are presented by the Southern Bank of Tennessee. Jake Lyman in today for the chairman of the board, David Reed. Hello, Jake.
Hello, Jared.
I'm doing great. Great to talk to you too, Jake. I was like, okay, where did I go with this? That's okay.
Sorry.
That's okay, because it is NFL draft reaction. And we're going to start right there off the top. We're going to be wall-to-wall today. I mean, look, the Predators could fire Andrew Burnett, and if they do, we'll do that tomorrow. Today is the draft, and it is the draft recap with the Titans. And I'm sure many of you are going to ask this question, because I've gotten this question in my personal text line and when I run into people and everything else. And it's, so Jared, what did you think of the Titans draft? Question mark. I get it every year around this time. And I see that right after the draft's over, this happens every year, we see people giving the grades right away. You know, Mel Kiper gave him a B, I think. I saw Pro Football Focus gave him an A, which I was not surprised by because I had done the Pro Football Focus. I had used their mock draft simulator. And both Kevin Winston and Elik Aominyor from Stanford, they both were really high on the PFF mock draft football simulator list. So I knew that they were going to be graded pretty well. But again, PFF gave them an A. I saw some Titan fans that were willing to hit the nuclear option on the franchise on Friday night, only to buy a Mike Borgonzi golden jacket on Saturday after the day three pick. So a lot of up and down for Titan fans over the course of the weekend. The Titans sent people I have never heard of before or didn't care to hear from to discuss their selections on Saturday. So who knows if the day three picks are going to work or not. But here's how I evaluate the draft. The Titans have decided and told us with their actions and their words that Cam Ward is a transcendent talent. Regardless of what all the other gurus say out there, former general managers, and we played their cuts throughout the course of the week, they doubt Cam Ward. The Tennessee Titans, again, with their actions and their words, have told us they think Cam Ward is the next great thing in the NFL. They turned down massive trade offers for him. They unretired a uniform number for him. They signed his BFF from Miami, Xavier Restrepo, as an undrafted free agent. They are treating this as if Cam Ward is Peyton Manning. Not that he's going to become Peyton Manning, but that he is Peyton Manning. The NFL draft media consistently said that Cam Ward was not that guy. And somebody is going to be right, and somebody is going to be wrong. So that's step one. And I have no idea who's going to be right and who's wrong. I just know. Either Cam Ward is going to be the next Manning. He is going to be the next Mahomes. He is going to be the next Lamar Jackson. Or he's not. And we're going to look back at this and say, they unretired a uniform number for him. Again, I was talking to people about this over the weekend. I mean, it's a good thing they didn't unretire a uniform for Vince Young or Marcus Mariota. And even though Cam was number one and Mariota was number two and Vince was number three, I do feel like the hype is the same with the three of them. Then there's Friday. So that's Thursday. They decided Cam's the guy. He's going to be a transcendent talent. He is your Brady, your Rodgers. On you go. Then there's Friday. They chose to go 2-for-1. There was a good pass rush prospect, Donovan Ezeraku, out of Boston College, and a good safety prospect, Nick Emmanuelwary, available out of South Carolina. But the Titans, because they wasted their third rounder on L'Jarius Sneed, made the calculated choice to go 2-for-1. With Femi Oladejo and his 4.5 sacks over Ezeraku and his 16.5 sacks, although Oladejo does have better measurables for the position. And instead of Emmanuelwary at safety, again, a massive producer in college, they went with Winston, who had similar measurables, although Emmanuelwary was a little bit faster, but only one interception in college, and he's coming off of an ACL tear. That was a calculated risk. If it were me, I would have picked one or the other, Emmanuelwary or Ezeraku, probably Emmanuelwary because I really like the player. and I would have picked him and moved on. If again, we did this when we practiced with the mock draft simulator. And we said, okay, you know, we can trade this pick here that would be James Pierce Jr., and here's who we'd end up with. And when you look back on it, do you wish you had just taken James Pierce? In this case, you could have had Ezeraku, you could have had a Manawari, or you could have had a pass rusher and a safety, but the pass rusher's not as good as Ezeraku, and the safety's not as good as a Manawari, and I would have taken a Manawari in that spot. But again, I get the calculated risk. So I don't have too much of a complaint about that, other than if you're going to get a sacker, and I know he moved from inside backer, you need to sack the quarterback. And then on day three, because I see a lot of people got excited about day three picks. Let's be honest when it comes to day three picks. Every single day three pick who hits is the exception, not the rule. Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tom Brady, Elvis Dumervil even. Those are the exceptions, not the rules. Even Amani Hooker has outperformed what you should expect out of a day three pick. So when it comes to the day three picks, between DK and Helm and Ayo Munyor, and more on him in a second, Slater, Harris, Mullings, let's see who makes an impact in training camp. Some of these things you kind of see right away. Where in training camp, a guy is playing up with the starters, and it's like, oh, hey, there's Jarvis Brownlee Jr. out there who's playing with the starters. He might get some run during the season. Then they flash in the preseason. Again, if you're good, you flash in the preseason. Drew Bennett flashed in the preseason. He was an undrafted free agent, but he flashed right away. I remember when the Titans played a meaningless fourth preseason game back in the day of the four preseason games, and David Long Jr. against the Chicago Bears just constantly flashed. That's actually why I look at Bryce Oliver, and I would not go into the season with him as a starting receiver, but that's why I have some hope for Bryce Oliver, because in training camp practices last year, I kept seeing Bryce Oliver make plays, and I'd be standing there, and I'd look at, who the hell is number 80? And I'm like, oh, yeah, it's Bryce Oliver. And then in the preseason, oh, hey, it's Bryce Oliver. And so you see these guys right away that kind of pop through early on. You'll know it in training camp. You'll know in the preseason if somebody's going to be a contributor or not, with the exception of Slater, who offensive linemen are different in terms of how you develop them. But when it comes to the day three picks, it's a dartboard thing, man. Just take as many throws at the board as you possibly can. And we'll see if these guys find their way into the lineup or not. But I do like the throws at the dartboard because DK is fast with a 4.3 440 and produced with 783 yards and 18.6 yards per catch last year at Florida. Ayo Munyor has medical red flags, but he produced in college, toasted Travis Hunter, and a pick at the end of the fourth round. I'll take the medical risks of he tore up his knees a bunch in high school and college. Again, it's different when it's the second round and when it's the fourth round. So when I walk away from the draft, I have a feeling that I understand what they did, regardless of whether or not it's what I would have done or what they would have done. I understand what they did. They took a quarterback who they think is going to be the next Patrick Mahomes at number one. Regardless of whether or not I think he's going to be the next Mahomes or whether or not you think he's going to be the next Mahomes, it doesn't really matter. They think he's going to be the next Mahomes. That you could have offered him five number one picks and they would not have done it. So I understand that. They took a calculated risk on Friday night of going for the upside of two guys over the more sure production of one guy. On Friday, they were able to check two positions instead of just one, but you would have had more of a sure thing if you had picked at 35. And then they drafted the traits on Saturday. That makes a lot of sense to me. Now, will any of these guys go out and be stars? Will this be the draft class we look back on like we look back on 2016? With Jack Conklin and Derrick Henry and Kevin Byard? Or is this going to be the draft class of 2019 with Simmons and A.J. Brown and Nate Davis and Amani Hooker and David Long? Or even the 1995 class, McNair at the top, Chris Sanders, Rodney Thomas, both contributors, and that's it. I have no way of knowing. And I'm not going to pretend that I have any way of knowing. Neither do you, neither does Mel Kiper Jr., and quite frankly, neither do they. But I hear the Titans talk a lot about process, and that we got to have a disciplined process here. And it's about the process. And this goes all the way through the process. And I'll say, at least their decisions make sense. This isn't 2015 when the Titans, the worst team in the NFL with two wins the previous year, drafted a fullback in the fourth round. They didn't take a bunch of injured guys up front. They didn't do anything overly reckless. Even the Ward thing, which you know I don't agree with, him being the next Mahomes. If they think that, and they do, that's who they should draft. So all in all, when you ask me, Jared, what did you think of the Titans draft? What I will say today is I understood what they were thinking. Doesn't mean I liked every pick. Doesn't mean I would have done what they did. But I understood what they were thinking, which over the last handful of years, whether it's drafting the injured Caleb Farley in the first round or some linebacker from Georgia I had never heard of in the third round, whether it was that or whether it was taking a right tackle and thinking he was going to be a left tackle, at least I understand what the Titans are thinking right now, which is a step, I guess, in the right direction. 615-737-1025, which is our phone number. We will get to your phones today. But coming up next, the decisions the Titans made over the weekend that I liked and the decisions that I didn't like. We'll hit them all up next. 615-737-1025, and then your phones today. It's Stillman & Company, 1025-1063 The Game.
So we came into tonight with pick 35. You know, we felt like we had a good volume of players in round two. You know, we wanted to get back up in three. So we did that. We ended up, you know, trading with Seattle there at 52 and then getting the pick 82 in the third round back. So we felt good about that. It was a 17-spot move, you know, and with the first pick there at 52, we took Femi Oladejo, the outside backer from UCLA. Femi is a tough, physical kid that really just started playing outside backer the fourth game of the season this year. He was playing Mike before. So he's developing as a pass rusher, so I think he has a lot of upside there as well. But, you know, he is, I tell you what, he can set the edge. He's physical. He's violent. And, you know, the kid loves football too. So that was a big part of it. And then at pick 82, we ended up taking Kevin Winston, the safety out of Penn State. Same thing with Kevin. He's a tough physical player, you know, that probably went a little higher in the draft. He had the ACL in September. And, you know, we felt comfortable with the doctors that he'd be ready here for training camp. So, you know, two guys that we felt, you know, bring a lot of competitive juice to the defense.
That was Mike Borgonzi on Friday. Again, where we picked up, it was funny because they traded with Seattle, and I was using Seattle as a team. I'm like, hey, if they trade back with Seattle, Seattle's got 2 seconds. And so if you trade back with Seattle to make a trade work, you know, I would prefer a second next year, then a third this year, and boom, they went out and they made the trade basically the second that we got off the air. The Browns made a pick, the Giants made a pick, and then boom, Titans made the trade with that pick. So with that, it is time. This weekend, for the first time, Jake Lyman, have you ever seen the movie Draft Day before?
Oh, I love the movie Draft Day. I watch it on Draft Day every year.
So I watched Draft Day last night for the first time ever. Well, I think I had seen it before, but I don't remember it at all. And I watched it last night for the first time ever, and I could not scoff at how unrealistic all of it was.
Oh, it's
but
horrible.
I get it. It's a movie for Hollywood. I got it. It's, you know, whatever. But so with that, We're using AI and Kevin Costner today to be our kind of voice of the draft. So with that, what I liked the Titans did and what I did not like, let's get right into it. Mr. Kevin Costner.
Here are the Titans draft decisions that Jared liked and that Jared did not like.
Okay, let's be positive. Ian always says be positive first, so that's what we're going to do. Let's start with a positive take here. One thing I liked, thank you, Chimre Dike at 103, the wide receiver out of Florida. Why? He can run, period. 4-3-4. All I heard all for the last 3 weeks was people talking about, who cares about the 40 time? I care about the 40 time. The NFL cares about the 40 time. The best general manager in the history of the Tennessee Titans cares about the 40 time. And this guy at a 4-3-4 is fast. And the old saying is, fast guys run fast and slow guys don't run. This dude ran. This team needs speed. They need to take the top off the defense. They need a guy who, when he gets the ball in his hands, he can take it the distance. And while I worry about him physically from a getting off the press in the NFL standpoint because he's not as big as I'd like him to be, this team needs speed. It's not as if they took him simply because he was a 4-3-4 in round two. They took him as a 4-3-4 in round four. So that I can live with. Calvin Ridley's got some speed. And outside of that, it's a bunch of slow guys like Nick Westbrook, Akine in years past. They need speed. This dude's got it. I like the pick at 103 of Chimre Dike.
Dislike.
Femi Oladejo at 52. And I'm going to tell you why. Because he only had 4 sacks last year. And yes, I know he's transitioned from inside backer to outside rusher. And that last year was the only year that he played as an outside rusher. But outside rushing is a position that is judged on by one thing. You know what it is. I know what it is. We all know what it is. Sacks. And I crushed the Bengals on Thursday night when they went with Shamar Stewart with the 14th overall pick out of Texas, or 17th overall pick out of Texas A&M, because even though he's got great measurables and he's very fast and he is built like a freaking racehorse, he had 4.5 sacks in a 4-year college career. That's not good enough. Austin Gelati, who went at 66 to the Chiefs, the pick that you traded for L'Jarius Sneed, had 40 sacks in his college career, including 24.5 over the last two seasons. But see, a veteran team like the Chiefs with veteran coaches like Steve Spagnuolo and Andy Reid, they're saying, hey, we're going to take the guy who actually sacks the quarterback instead of the guy who should be built like the guy who does sack the quarterback. That makes me very nervous. I get the traits he has for a pass rusher, but remember, PT had good traits for a tackle. I hate using a second-round pick on pure projection for a guy who did not perform at the thing that you're drafting him to do with a second-round pick.
Like?
Elik Ayomanior at 136. Why? Because he's likely a high third-round pick-ish type player who probably had a medical flag for his knee injuries in high school and college. And yes, he dropped the ball way too much at Stanford. 6 drops each of the last 2 years. But he's productive. And guess what he is? Just like Chimre Dike. Fast. 4-4-4 speed. At 6'2 and 206. Again, it's a throw at the dartboard. The Titans have made 2 of them where they take 2 fast receivers and say, okay, what are the odds that one of these 2 guys makes it? That I like. So the Elik Ayomanior pick, again, I know you people think all I do is sit there and bitch about what the Titans do. Saturday when I saw that pick, and I try not to get too excited about day 3 picks, but when I saw that pick, I said, okay, that's one I'm on board with right there. He's big, and he's fast, and he was productive in college. I like the pick of Elik Ayomanior at 136.
Dislike.
I do not like the fact that the Titans did not take a corner in this draft until 183. Why? Because while I don't dislike the day 3 picks that they made, the Titans have a serious issue at corner. Jarvis Brownlee's cover grade last year. And I know everybody loves Jarvis Brownlee and, wow, let Rand cook, he's the man. Jarvis Brownlee's coverage grade, according to Pro Football Focus, was 146th out of 222 qualifying corners, and he was penalized 9 times last year. And that's the one consistent foundational starter you have at the position. Roger McCreary's a nickel who's a pending free agent, and Legarius Sneed has a bad knee and might end up in jail. So while I'm not a draft for need guy, I get it. But the corner depth on the Titans is very concerning, and I just don't know how you're going to get better at corner when you don't sign any of them and you wait until 183 to pick a corner. It's like, okay, well, Jarvis Brownlee and Baker and those guys that played last year, I guess they'll just have to play again this year, and we'll have to hope that it's better than 146th out of 222. I like the shots Titans took at wide receiver. I know I've already highlighted each guy, but add Xavier Restrepo as an undrafted free agent into that group and add Tyler Lockett in the signing that they made. I like, again, the throws at the dartboard. They drafted two guys who can run. They drafted a veteran who is consistent and plays in all the games, and an undrafted free agent who was productive in college. Now, he can't run, Xavier Restrepo, but he was productive in college. Surely one of those guys or more can contribute. Again, 2 fourth-rounders, $4 million for Lockett, and a UDFA spot for Restrepo. I don't love the idea of signing Cam's buddy when I think Cam needs to be bonding with his current receivers, like actual NFL players he's going to throw the balls to, not Scarbini from college. But again, when looking at it in a vacuum of this weekend, it went from Calvin Ridley, Van Jefferson, and Bryce Oliver to Calvin Ridley, Tyler Lockett, Van Jefferson, Chimray Dike, Ilaike Omenyor, Xavier Restrepo, Bryce Oliver. I think that they've got a shot to have a couple of hits there. So I like what they did this weekend, including Lockett and Restrepo at wide receiver. I dislike Friday night's trade. The Seahawks took advantage of the Titans' desperation to get back in the third round. The Titans barely won the trade, according to the trade chart. We're talking about like 10 points, which is like a seventh round pick. You know, the difference between what they got in return and what they gave up. Usually, the team that trades down, you look at these trade chart metrics, and the team that trades down wins constantly. I mean, Cleveland absolutely robbed Jacksonville for that trade on Thursday night. The Rams ended up picking up, a third-round pick in value with what they got out of the Falcons. You didn't really get a lot of value as far as the trade with Seattle was concerned. And that's saying something because, once again, the team that trades down on day one or day two usually win by a lot. The Rams, you traded the 35th pick, didn't get much value. The Rams last year traded for the 39th pick and gave up the most value, I think, in the history of the second round. The Seahawks, I think, also got one over on the Titans because they traded away pick 52 and not pick 50. Now, I don't think the Titans would have drafted Elijah Arroyo, but I do wonder if Seattle's like, no, we're not going to deal pick 50. We'll give you 52 because we don't want you taking Cam Ward's tight end, so we're going to give you the weaker of our 2 second-round picks. And that bothered me a little bit. It just kind of felt like the Titans felt like they had to make a trade on Friday night and not like they felt like they had to make a good trade on Friday night. And so I have to say I disliked it simply because I'd rather have had Ezeraku or Emanuwori instead of Oladejo and Winston. So that's what I liked and what I disliked from the entire weekend for the Titans. Again, I love the speed they drafted at receiver. 615-737-1025. We'll get into your phone. 615-737-1025. Plus, the Titans have gone out of their way to not draft injured players, not sign injured players in free agency, not any of those things. And then on Friday night, they drafted somebody who's hurt. Got a quick thought on that, which we'll get to next. Stillman & Company, 615-737-1025. It's 1025 and 106 for the game.
Well, you know, his tape last year in 23 was good, too. He was probably, you know, he's probably up there with the two top safeties that went, in our opinion, when we watched him. And, you know, we felt comfortable. You know, we met with him at the combine. Obviously had the medical there with the doctors. We got with them, and they felt he was on track, you know, to be available in training camp. But we love everything that Kevin brings, though. He's tough, physical, loves football, all that stuff. So, and plus he's from DeMatha, where Denard Wilson went to high school, so that was part of it.
Okay, there you go. That was Mike Borgonzi talking about Kevin Winston Jr., the safety out of Penn State that the Titans drafted in the third round on Friday night. And, I mean, when this came down the pipe, Titan fans were ready to go nuclear on Friday. He's a hurt. He's got a torn ACL. He's got a... All right. I, as you know, dog them when they do something stupid and invest in somebody who's got a serious injury. For instance, Caleb Farley, Julio Jones in his hamstring, Legarius Sneed in his knees. I'm actually going to give the Titans a pass on the Kevin Winston thing because there are two things at play here when it comes into the context of drafting an injured player. Number one, this is an ACL. This is not a back injury. This is not a knee degradation issue. This is not a neck injury. There's not some sort of exploratory surgery that's been done on this guy. It's a torn ACL. And in 2025, we know how to fix torn ACLs. When it comes to the Abdul Carter foot injury, there are guys that play that position who have never, ever been the same after they have the surgery. I'm not using the third overall pick on somebody who's hurt. But a third round pick in the 80s is not the same as the third overall pick or the first overall pick. There are guys that I wouldn't draft because they're too slow, or guys I wouldn't draft because they're too hurt, or guys I wouldn't draft because they've got a history of missing games in the first round or in the second round. But it's a totally different thing when we're talking about the third round. And it's a much different thing when we're talking about the fifth round or the sixth round or something like that. So I have no issue with the Kevin Winston pick because of the torn ACL. The thing that I worry about when it comes to Kevin Winston is that he had one interception in college, and it was because of a disguised coverage, i.e. the quarterback threw it right to him. Whereas Nick Amanawori, the guy that I really wanted at safety, I mean impact game-changing safeties, which he may not be, but that's who I wanted, and I see that when I watch the tape after Trevor said, go watch Nick Amanawori, he's legit. Nick Amanawori had 6 interceptions in college, 4 last year, including 2 pick sixes. Now, granted, again, the 80s and the 30s are not the same. But I do not have an issue with taking a guy with a torn ACL in the third round. Especially a guy with a torn ACL in the third round who ran the 40 at the combine. That means he's healthy enough. So that one I'm fine with. Phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Let's get to you today. Tristan is going to kick us off today. Tristan, thank you for calling. Thank you for waiting. You go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, Jared. I agree with you on Cam Ward. Like, I heard your talk with Chad Withrow, like, on Friday, and I agree with you that he's never started it down. So I give the Titans a B-plus in the draft. Like the receivers, the tight end, like I would have traded down like to get more picks, like for the number one overall pick. And who's the safety you're talking about? Like the one
Kevin Winston Jr.
No, the one you were talking just right before I.
Oh, Nick Emanwori.
Where did he get drafted to? Or
so the pick that you used. Thank you for your call, Tristan. The pick that you traded to Seattle was used for Seattle to take Nick Emanwori. Now, let me just say this. Again, Seattle traded a third rounder to you, and I don't know if this was the third rounder from the Raiders for Geno Smith, but they traded you the 52nd pick, which came from Pittsburgh. So they traded you a second and a third round pick in order for them to draft Nick Emanwori. And I love Nick Emanwori, but do you realize that's DK Metcalf and Geno Smith for Nick Emanwori? And I know that Nicky Manwari's on a rookie salary, and Geno Smith is making $40 million, and they signed Sam Darnold in free agency, so they didn't have to give up anything in order to do it. And I know DK Metcalf's making $30 million, so you're talking about like the difference in $60 million as well. But I think I'd rather have a quarterback in DK Metcalf than Nicky Manwari. And I love Nicky Manwari, but that's just something that kind of crossed my brain at one point. A bunch of you have asked into the text line. One texter says, do you like Gunnar Helm over Chig? Jared, what's your opinion on Gunnar Helm? No opinion on the tight end pick. So a lot of you want to ask about the tight end, the Gunnar Helm pick. So I don't love the Gunnar Helm pick, and I'm going to tell you why. Because it sounds like Gunnar Helm is a lot of what you already have. He's a receiving tight end who can't block. Now, Chig is a receiving tight end who can't block, but he drops the football too much. Wiley is a receiving tight end who can't block, but he gets hurt too much. So maybe Gunnar Helm, unlike those guys, won't drop the ball, but he's not as fast as Chig. He's not as big as Wiley. To me, it's kind of like, all right, let's put these three together, shake it up. Which ice cream flavor do you like the most? Helm's probably the most consistent. Chig is the most athletic, and Wiley is the biggest. But again, none of these guys block. And that's something I need the Titans to, with a young quarterback, to get a tight end who can block and who can catch. And it doesn't look like Gunnar Helm does that. So as far as the people asking about Gunnar Helm, again, I don't hate the pick because he was a very productive college player. Again, their big board has him ranked at the ESPN's big board. Okay, whatever. But it does seem like he went lower than the big boards thought he would go. But he doesn't really have, like, the athletic traits to develop into a star, and he doesn't really have the blocking to really be a tough-nosed tight end, and I think they need a little bit of that. 615-737-1025. More of your phone, 615-737-1025. If you want to weigh in, we got a lot of your phones to get to, so we'll go right to them next. Stillman and Company, the day after the draft, again, breaking it down for the Titans. I saw one person in the YouTube chat said, I think Jared secretly loves this draft. He just doesn't want to say it. Well, I wouldn't have taken Cam Ward number one. I didn't necessarily love the trade with the Seahawks. And the tight end, I'm okay with. But the two receivers I really, really liked. 615-737-1025. It's Stillman and Company, 1025 The Game.
They all have developmental, things that they have to go through here. But then once you start getting into the mid to later rounds and some of these guys, you're looking at some traits, speed at the receiver position with Elik and DK and Marcus Harris is a guy that it played really one big year of football at Cal. But you saw the traits on film, the quick twitch athlete that can develop. And the same thing with Mullings too. You're looking at a guy that played linebacker for 2 years when he first came in, and really last year was really his first really workload of carrying the football. But you saw a big body there that runs hard. And you saw a lot of upside with him, and we were able to get him later on the sixth.
There you go. That was Mike Borgonzi today talking about the picks they made. And, hey, developmental traits, and, yeah, that sounds great. All right, let's go to your phones as promised. Mike has been waiting patiently and is up next on the Titans draft. Mike, thank you for calling. Go ahead.
Hey, Jared, thanks for taking my call. I got kind of a two-part question here. So the first part is, are you surprised at the lack of player movement around the draft? Normally we see a couple of trades that involve a player or two, specifically like Will Levis with the Titans. I know that was not guaranteed that he was going to get moved, but are you surprised at the lack of that movement? And second part, now that the draft is over, would it be easier or harder to move a player like that or let someone like Jalen Ramsey, who I know you've talked about in the past, trying to get him with following the L'Jarius Sneed news?
Yeah, I think it's easier now. Thank you for your call. I think it's easier now because you're really only going to be dealing with next year's picks. And there could have been an instance where you're talking to somebody and you're wanting a pick to use right now. Well, now it's over. So when it comes to, all right, we'll trade Will Levis for a fifth, that's a 2026 fifth. Whereas this past week, it could have been, well, we want Will Levis for a fifth, but we want a 2025 fifth. So that makes it a little bit easier. I am surprised by the lack of movement of players around the NFL. you know, again, it's not as big as it used to be where teams would trade players during the draft. Like, instead of, okay, we'll offer you to make this big move, Jacksonville and Cleveland on Thursday night. Instead of two number ones and a number two and a number three and whatever, it would have been like two number ones and our running back, you know, and Tank Bigsby for whatever. They don't do that as much anymore. The only player who I can think of that got traded over the weekend, I think, is Sam Howell. You know, Washington trades a, or Seattle trades a backup quarterback to Minnesota for a fifth. Other than that, weren't really a lot of player trades. I was a little surprised by that with names like Mark Andrews and names like Jalen Ramsey and, to the caller's point, Will Levis and other names out there. I was a little surprised by that. 615-737-1025. One texter, Jude, says, do you think Xavier Restrepo will make the Titans roster? I do not. And I will tell you why Xavier Restrepo will not make the roster. I find this hilarious. The Titans Twitter is defending Xavier Restrepo and his 4.85 40 time, which is abysmal. Like, I don't want a pass rusher running that speed. Gunnar Helm ran a faster 40, and he is a tight end. Sam Darnold ran a faster 40, and he is a quarterback, and he's not a particularly fast quarterback than Xavier Restrepo. And people tell me, well, the 40-yard dash doesn't matter. Well, it mattered to 32 NFL teams because the all-time leading receiver in Miami Hurricane history, and I mean, we're talking about real receivers, about Andre Johnson and Santana Moss and, like, real receivers. Michael Irvin from the U. And he's the all-time, and he did not get drafted because of that 40 time. And then Titan fans are like, well, he had a hurt hamstring, Jared. And I'm like, well, the other 32 teams didn't buy that, including your team, who did not draft him and drafted two receivers on day three instead. So here's why I don't think Restrepo will make the team. Because, number one, he is slow. People are like, turn on the tape. You don't need the tape. He ran a 40. He's slow. And that's important in the NFL. Here's why he won't make the team. Because how many receivers is this team going to carry? You're already going to take Ridley and Lockett. They're on the team. Duh. Burks is going to make the team. Now, does Burks make the team on the PUP list to start the season? Probably not. You know, he probably starts training camp on the PUP list, but Burks is going to make the team. Van Jefferson's going to make the team. That's four. You drafted two receivers on day three in the fourth round. They're probably both going to make the team. That's five. Now, Xavier Restrepo has to beat out Bryce Oliver and every other undrafted free agent out there. And I just don't think he's going to do that. I absolutely think he could be on the practice squad. I do not think that he's going to make the team. And again, I'm not the biggest fan of this because I do feel like, you know, Cam Ward stood up for Xavier Restrepo in his Green Bay press conference after he got picked on Thursday night. And said, you know, but screw the 40 time, which is easy for him to say, but like, it matters. It matters, or else Xavier Restrepo would have been drafted. If Xavier Restrepo had never run the 40, he probably gets drafted. But he did run the 40, and he is slow. And the reason why I don't like it is because once they start the rookie minicamp, and Restrepo's going to be there, and Ward's going to be there, and I worry that those guys are going to be attached at the hip the whole time, and that when Cam's doing all of his offseason training, he's going to be doing it with Restrepo. And that when it's just going to be him and Restrepo, just buddy-buddy. And I want Cam to be developing those relationships with Shamir Dike, with Elik Ayomanior, with Calvin Ridley, with Bryce Oliver, with you know, the guys that are actually going to play. And so I don't necessarily, on all of the other teams, I would have said, yeah, oh yeah, that's a great UDFA signing. It does bother me a little bit with the Titans because I don't think it's a good idea to have Cam buddy-buddy with a guy from college who runs a 4.8. I'd rather him make new friends. One texter says, I know you put an emphasis on the 40 and you don't like Restrepo because he's slow, but if you run fast but play slow, isn't that counterintuitive? TD and D Mace both say that Chim DK plays closer to a 4-6. Well, Shamir DK, again, he averaged 16 yards a catch at Florida. 16 yards. I'm sorry, that's legit. See, I worry a little bit about his inability to get to that speed because from what the scouting report says from Dane Brugler at The Athletic, he's not very physical getting off the line of scrimmage. And that is an issue. But when it comes to the way he actually plays, I mean, he runs. Like, that's 16 yards a catch. That's not an accident. That's a guy who's got speed. So if a guy averaged 20 yards a catch, or if a guy averaged 13 yards a catch, you know, a significant amount of yards per catch, if they did that and they ran slow, I'd want to say, okay, so what? Explain that one to me. But if they run fast and they average a bunch of yards per catch, that's telling me that they use their speed. That's what it's telling me with DK. And how many guys out there run slow, like run fast in the workout, but run slow in the games? Because there are guys out there, like everyone brings up John Ross. The 40 time doesn't matter. John Ross ran the 40. Troy Williamson ran the 40 fast. Running the 40 fast and sucking are not mutually exclusive. But that doesn't mean that those guys can't run. It just means they can't play receiver. It means they can't catch. It means they can't get open. It means they can't do the things that actually matter outside of running fast. But if you can run fast in the 40, you usually run fast in the games. And so, yeah, it matters to me with Restrepo. And you say, like, it matters to me. Like, I say it matters to me, and people are like, who cares? Well, it clearly matters to the other 32 teams, too. One text says, turn on the film, Jared. He doesn't run a 4.8 40. Call all the other teams in the league and say, hey, why didn't you draft Xavier Restrepo? And they're all going to give you the same answer. Because he's slow. The production that Xavier Restrepo had in college absolutely warrants a pick in the NFL draft. Probably on day three, maybe at the end of day two. He ran a 4.8 40 and did not get drafted by anybody. Anybody. This isn't a Jared's picking on him thing. This is a the entire NFL came to the same conclusion. So don't tell me that it doesn't matter. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. Now, I'd like to think that I've been right about a lot of things over the years. Now, I've been wrong about a lot of things over the years as well, and I'll admit to them. Some of them have been bad, but I've been right, I think, about a lot more. And I'm not sure I have ever been more right, and I didn't even mean to be this right, than I have been for about the last month and a half in calling Shedeur Sanders a TV prospect. The story of the weekend, I believe, in the entire United States of America, the Shedeur Sanders fall. It's really simple if you think about it. We'll do it next. Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106 through the game.